wanted the best.
You got the best.
The hottest band in the world. Cats.
What are we waiting for?
Greetings from Jendel. It's your boy Jody Havnot. I'm here with my boys,
D-Rock
and
Andrew.
So we're here today, and we're gonna do a little bit of a roundtable on Kiss Unplugged. Man, what do you guys think about it?
Kiss acoustic. What could be better?
I loved it.
For people like us, man, at the time, all right, it was like the fucking convention was totally awesome, and they were playing all this shit. So there wasn't a whole lot of surprises. But for anyone who didn't go to the convention, Kiss Unplugged is one of the greatest set lists they ever put together. You know what I'm saying? It was like all kinds of shit's represented. And it was just really magic at the time. And we were talking about it before we started getting rolling. But I remember it coming out on Halloween. And now I'm starting to doubt that memory. Like, have I manufactured that? Because there's nothing about it on the internet. But I seem to recall it came out on Halloween. Is that your memory of it, D-Rock?
I don't remember exactly when it was that it came out. I mean, I remember seeing it, but I don't remember exactly when it came out. I mean, that was so long ago for me.
Right. My memory is it was like Halloween. I went out. I had set my freaking VCR. For any of you that remembers what a VCR is.
Okay. I miss VCRs.
It was like the cassette tape deck for movies.
Right. It's funny that we have to explain that because there are people that have no idea what a VCR is, which is insane. But anyways, so I set my VCR, it recorded the show, I went out, came home, did my thing, watched it, and I was completely blown away. I mean, I don't know, from my point of view, it was one of the greatest things they've ever done. And I watched it last night in preparation for this, and I had the same exact feelings. It was just like, one after another, it's just fucking great, dude. We'll get into a track by track and all that later, but I just think it was so exciting. And I'm not even talking about when like Ace and Peter came on stage, which was even more exciting, but just the simple fact that they were playing these great songs that they never really played a lot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and to see them in a relaxed atmosphere, you know, was even greater, you know, too.
Yeah, and sounding really, really fucking good.
They were nailing everything.
Yeah, vocally, like at that time, the band vocally was kick-ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely in lock on that.
Every one of them, they were singing really well together, and the harmonies are like right on. It's just really awesome, and it's kind of a shame, you know, when you think about it. That band, just, you know, the Revenge lineup, if you want to call it that, live in that situation, they're on fire, dude. And then shortly after it, it's over, and they could have kept banging out really great shit, you know. But anyways, what are your thoughts on it, Andrew? It wasn't, you know, you probably weren't into Kiss at the time that it actually happened.
I wasn't, but actually my first reference point to what Unplugged was came from the interview, the Jay Leno interview for You Wanted the Best, You Got the Best.
Oh, okay.
Which, as people listening who know me know, that was my first exposure to Kiss. That was my first Kiss CD. And so hearing that for the first time, like, I already got the story as to how the reunion sort of happened, because they do mention the conventions, and then they mention to, like, ultimately what would be Unplugged and then the reunion tour. I never really investigated into it, but I was aware of it. And first time I saw it, I'll be honest, I was, well, you know, when you're younger, you're all about the electric guitar, you're all about everything's heavy and whatnot. But for, you know, recent years, I've come to really, really like Unplugged a lot more.
I think it's great. I thought the convention was great.
With that comment that you just made, Andrew, you know, about the starting to appreciate the acoustic stuff, it's like, you know, I love the comment that Paul made, you know, where he said, you know, that, you know, a song isn't a great song unless it sounds, you know, good acoustically. You know, if it doesn't sound good acoustically, then it's not a good song, you know. And
I subscribe to that for sure.
But even now, you know.
Yeah, like if you're relying on just some crunch tone, and then you play the song on an acoustic and it sucks, then it just sucks.
Then the song sucks, right. you know, because it's got to be able to be versatile. It's got to be able to hold up in whatever conditions you're going to be playing in.
Well, that's the classic way, is you got to have good chords and a nice melody on top of it, you know?
Right.
That's 101 type shit.
My only exception is Dragon Force, and I'm a huge power metal geek.
I know, I was thinking about that after I said that. I was thinking, Andrew's probably getting pissed, dude, because he loves the crunch.
No, I can
you know what I'm saying. You know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I guess for that crazy solos, it's a little different, but it's got to have a good, clean foundation.
Yeah, you got
to
have a
nice
structure.
I know, like, death metal sounds like noise to most people, but it's actually very technical, and it still sounds good if you hear that shit. They still write it on acoustic.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah. Like Gary Holt from Exodus, he's the greatest thrasher of all time. He writes on acoustic.
Right on.
So it's got to have a good foundation, like, or else it's just a bunch of bells and whistles.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to have three chords, just put them in the right order. You know what I mean?
Cosmic.
So anyways, let's get into a little bit of a track by track, because there's so much to say about this. I don't know, man. I'm all jacked up. I'm loving Unplugged right now.
All right!
I hadn't watched it in quite a few years, you know what I'm saying? And last night watching it, it was fucking awesome, dude. Like, I figured I'd be like, oh, yeah, heard it, seen it, you know? But I was actually really enjoying myself watching it again, you know what I mean? And I was really excited about it. And you guys watched it as well in the recent past, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get that feeling, or was it just kind of blah for you?
And I really liked it, too, because it wasn't like just watching any of their other concerts, you know? I mean, they actually broke out songs that they've never even played before.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's a great
set list.
Made
that evening a bit more special.
Right.
Special. So let's kick it right off, man. Coming Home. What do you guys think, man?
It's a great opener.
Yeah, and I can tell you at the time, it was so fucking cool. I'd seen it. I heard them do it on the, you know, the fucking... the convention tour not too long before this and was blown away. But just the simple fact they were playing Coming Home off Hotter Than Hell, I mean, that's just fucking cool.
Yes.
And it sounds really good acoustic. I think you said, Andrew, that you prefer, or was that Going Blind, you prefer acoustic to the electric?
Well, also Coming Home too.
Really?
If I speak frankly, yeah.
It was definitely great acoustic. I was really impressed with that one acoustic.
We'll get there when you get there. But yeah, Coming Home... Who would have ever thought they'd play that one, since it seems to me like it would have been an obvious one to have been playing live all these years? Because it's a great song, you know?
But, well, that's with a lot of their songs we think would be awesome for them to be playing live, and they just never did.
That's true. But I'm just saying, like, once they started doing it, now it's like you can expect it at every acoustic show, you know what I mean? You watch those Sailaways or anything they do acoustic, they always do that one. And it makes sense. It's a good starter and everything. It's a good, nice, you know, nice couple chords to get a nice sound check to as well. A nice G, you know. But I think that it was just super cool that they were playing it, and the vocals on every single song on this, you know, performance or CD, if you will, which came out a little bit later. I mean, everything that they sing, it's impeccable. Wouldn't you guys say?
Yes.
Oh, I thought.
I mean, they had the liberty of, you know, if it wasn't, they could do it over, obviously, and we've talked about it. They haven't got into it yet, but, you know, they did a few redos. It's not a big deal. But I'm just saying, yes, for a band to come out and just, I don't know, man, I was really impressed with their vocals. You know, the music's always been solid.
All right!
Another great thing, I'll bring up the actual tracks as we go along, but... A lot of these songs I'm actually, like, I had nothing for electric, but it's weird, when I heard it at its basic form on acoustic, then that's what sort of triggered it into me actually digging the songs, and I'll get into specific ones in a few minutes, but it's kind of funny how that works too, when you hear the root of it, or in a different perspective or context, how right. You can actually, same thing kind of happened, I mentioned before, but Wouldn't You Like to Know Me, I had nothing for it, but when I heard it differently, as in you guys doing it, That's my favorite Paul song.
I think that's cool as hell.
Just funny how that works.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So Coming Home, I have nothing but great things to say about it. I just think it's fucking great, man. My notes, I actually made notes for a change. And all it says is Coming Home. It says pretty fucking awesome. I mean, what else can you say?
It's a very peppy opener. Like, it's very energetic. It's a feel-good song. So
it kind of set the mood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Then they bust straight into Plaster Caster.
Now, this is a song where I was talking before, I had absolutely nothing for.
Really?
yeah, then I heard it, just like, holy shit, this is stupid, but it's fucking fantastic.
I always loved that one on Love Gun. I just never thought we'd ever hear it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like you, Andrew, you know, I mean, I never really held anything for that song, you know, until I heard it acoustically, you know, because, I mean, then you're able to hear every part that every instrument's doing. You can hear the lyrics clearly. And, yeah, I mean, it's a cheesy Gene song about his pecker being molded, you know, but...
still. It didn't even happen. He's just wishing that they would have taken a cast.
Right, but still, you know, I mean, it's still a great song, you know, I mean... When you listen to it acoustically, I mean, even though it's cheesy lyrics, but it was still put together great, you know? Right.
I have a couple notes on Plastercaster, and what's tripping me out, what tripped me out through the whole Unplugged once I noticed it was, dude, Bruce is pretty much copping the Ace leads note for note, right?
Yeah.
More or less. And I was like, no one was bitching about how he was a fake Ace, you know what I'm saying? We were all loving it. And thinking that it was finally cool that someone was playing the Ace licks, you know?
Well, it's because he wasn't wearing his makeup. Let's be honest here.
Is that what it is?
Because
I was trying
sure
to figure out what the deal is. I hadn't considered that, bro.
I but just assumed right. that's...
Yeah. You're probably right. I didn't... Yeah. Totally. That one slipped past me, but yeah. I could see it. But yeah, I mean...
Like, I'm sure they were, like, a little miffed, but, like, as soon as, like... Just like Bruce playing those leads is like you hitting someone, and then Tommy playing those leads in the makeup is like you hitting someone and then peeing on them. Like, that's just like the ultimate insult, you know what I mean? So.
It's not to me, man. I like that he plays the Ace licks. I want to hear the Ace licks.
No, no, but that's why alright, bad analogy, but you get what I mean. Like, just people got somewhat upset at Bruce, but as soon as Tommy puts on the sacred Ace makeup, then that's like the ultimate insult. Right. Should have had a better analogy, but
I get
I'm immature
saying.
And I love to say peeing. Sorry, everyone. I'm in a goofy mood. Sorry, D-Rock.
I'm with you, Jody, on the fact that, you know, okay, Kiss has had a lot of members, you know, throughout the years, you know, that have played a lot of songs that we all know and recognize. You know, but the fact is, you know, if you're going to play a song that somebody else wrote it, I agree with the fact that you should play it how they wrote it. I mean, yeah, put your own little twist on it, but still, if it's that noticeable like Ace's leads are,
exactly,
then he's play them like Ace played them. You know, I mean, I don't think that's an insult, you know, that Bruce, you know, or Tommy, you know, plays them all the same because, I mean, face it, that's how the song was wrote. That's how it should be played.
Yeah,
that's how I feel.
A lot of people bitch about, like it could be the opposite thing, too, like how people get annoyed, like, when Vinny was playing Ace's licks.
Vinny like didn't how, play Ace's licks.
That's what I'm saying. When it came time to do a solo, it would sound nothing like Ace, and people bitched about that too. So yeah. The lesson here is that Kiss fans will bitch about absolutely everything.
Yeah, 22. If you played exactly like the person and you're not that person, you're going to get ridiculed for it. But then at the same time, if you play it your way and not the way it was wrote, then you're still going to get bitched about it for it. So... fuck it.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
You'll get more fans if you play it like how it was written, so that's generally what people do.
Well, I think like certain songs, man, like...
It's good to have a little flavor as well, like your own flavor, but don't just go like all Vinny, you know?
Right.
Right.
I mean, you want to hear the parts that you're used to hearing in that particular song. And, you know, whether it's a guitar solo, a bass lick, a drum fill, I want them to play... I want it to sound like what I've heard it, you know, for my whole life sounding like.
Yeah, those notable parts, you have to play them, you know, otherwise the song's botched, you know.
Right. Mm. But yeah, like, even at the convention, I don't remember hearing Plastercaster, and then I was thinking, huh, I figured that this Unplugged would be kind of just like the convention, but, you know, shot pro, and would be awesome.
What's that sign say? This one? We don't do this one a lot. What's that sign?
But yeah, I thought it was super cool they did Plastercaster. Bruce killed the lead. And I love it. I think it's awesome. So then they go into, it's like they got me hooked, dude. The first two songs are phenomenal, basically. Then they run into Going Blind. And what are you guys' thoughts on that one?
I liked it. I thought it sounded great acoustically.
I do too. And that's Andrew's one that he prefers big time.
Absolutely. Like, it sounds all right on electric, but like, it's definitely more suited to an acoustic song. Because I don't want to say less energy, but you know what I mean. It's just, it's mellow.
Yeah, it's like,
so it's more suited to, yeah, very.
I love everything about it.
I also like how he says, from the little lady from the land beneath the sea.
Right, that's the old school lyric.
Yeah, I love that.
I do too. That's actually in my notes as well. I love Gene's bass line. I mean,
oh man, like, fucking, that's my favorite part of Unplugged, if I'm being honest here.
Yeah, Gene's killing everything on this album, this absolutely performance, or this album. I tend to think of Unplugged as the show. I bought the CD, but if I'm going to check out Unplugged, I'm going to watch it. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you got the option, why wouldn't you just watch it? You know, you're going to hear the same thing, but you could see it as well. I don't know.
With your eyes.
With your eyes. See that stuff, man. Those guys are real. Anyways, I thought Going Blind, you know, was another convention tour jam, but man, they kill that song acoustically.
Mm-hmm.
And just think about the set list already. You got a song from Hotter Than Hell, then the Love Gun song, and then another Hotter Than Hell that goes all the way back to like fucking Rainbow and, you know, Gene and Steve Cornell and shit.
Yeah.
And then, so what do you, I mean, is that our thoughts on Going Blind? Are we done with that one?
Gene's bass part is the star of that song for sure.
Yeah. Great vocal from Gene. Great harmonies from the whole band as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
I would have to say. And that goes for pretty much the whole, I'm going to say, performance.
Yeah.
So let's go into Do You Love Me, man. Did you guys expect that one?
Sort of.
Yeah.
All I can say about that one is it just rocked. Yeah!
The part that stands out the most to me about this version of Do You Love Me is I love the way they, you know, the middle eight part, like, on Destroyer, it's just two guitars playing single notes, but I love how they arpeggiate that, and they've been doing it ever since they did it this on Unplugged, and it just sounds so cool. You know, your backstage pass, you know the part I'm talking about, middle eight. Instead of going, it's going ching 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 ching. You know what I'm talking about, right?
It sounds like that Japanese song that they just.
Oh boy, the Japanese song. I just don't really dig that one. You like that one, D-Rock?
I can do without it.
Right. I like the video a little bit. That's totally off the subject. But I think them doing Do You Love Me was pretty cool.
That's one of my ass songs. Like, I still don't like it. That or On the Studio Unplugged. Like, it's decent, but just I've never really had anything for it.
Really? See, for me, Do You Love Me is one of my all-time favorite Paul songs. Especially on Destroyer, or I used to prefer the double platinum version of Do You Love Me, because really? It has like a different mix. The vocals sound a little different to me, especially the background vocals. But I really do like it on that Resurrected as well. And you can hear like this weird, there's like an extra kick drum slap back instead of just going, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of different. And the vocals, it's a totally different mix on the Resurrected. Sometimes I do an A-B, on my iPod. And, man, that's pretty... A lot of people slag Resurrected, but I actually dig it. I think it sounds good. It's just different than what you're used to. You know what I mean? Anyway, that has nothing to do with fucking Unplugged. But I say Do You Love Me was a pretty strong one on Unplugged. I don't know. You guys give it a thumbs up. Andrew's giving it the kind of medium. Eh.
I'll let it slide, but I'm not too excited.
Right. And D-Rock, what did you think about it?
I just thought it rocked.
Yeah, it rocks. The next one's one of my songs. It doesn't matter.
Really?
Doesn't matter what version of it. I don't like Domino. I don't like that song.
Domino's always been one of my favorites.
I know. I don't get it.
I love that song.
I can't stand that Gene Simmons going ZZ Top shit. And I can't stand how corny it is. I got a man-sized predicament.
It's a big one.
It's just like, next.
But, you know, when you hear it acoustically like this, in a way, it kind of sounds like this song was made to be played acoustically.
All 27 takes.
Right.
Right. But I mean, still, I mean, just the sound. I mean, the bluesy guitar. You know, I mean, it just sounds like it was meant, you know, to be played and recorded acoustically, you know.
Yeah, I think it comes off well acoustic for what
very
it is,
bluesy.
You know. I just can't get past Gene and his stupid lyrics and his lame ZZ Top and his
every
owl and his fucking
owl.
You know, and the whole part, that bitch bends out, dude, fuck off. Don't treat women that way. It's really corny. It's really corny. I'll just leave it at that.
Makes me want a milkshake.
Yeah?
Makes me hungry for a buffet.
A buffet.
There's a buffet. A new song. Buffet, I don't want to eat.
I like that. Nibble, in fact, huh? I like that so much I'm going to use it in the next song. Interview.
Jeez, buffet lyrics.
And now we go to the next song.
Ow.
Ow.
So yeah, you guys like Domino better than I do, but it is what it is, man. You know, I just don't think it's one of the strong ones. But the next song, man, sure knows something.
Killer.
No, it's not Choose.
Was it?
No,
yeah.
It sure knows something.
I wrote down my comments. Every
oh,
song.
Oh yeah, you're right. It is Got to Choose was next.
Oh, that's
on the CD, it goes to Domino, I guess.
Oh, you see, I'm reading the CD. Oh,
okay. Mm. On the actual performance on MTV or whatever, on the DVD of it, it's Got to Choose. My notes for that are badass / harmonies kickass / Bruce rules.
I was impressed, you know, with Bruce on that one. I mean, he actually nailed Ace's solo.
Nailed it, dude. You know what? I was thinking around this point in the video. I was thinking back to the beginning where Ace was like, you know, playing Shock Me on an acoustic was impossible. Meanwhile, Bruce is tearing up all these Ace leads on a freaking Ovation, one of the stiffest guitars you could play. You know what I mean? And, you know, Ace was sitting backstage going, damn, this guy's pretty fucking good.
Right.
I would have been. That's what I'd have been thinking to myself. Like, holy shit, man, this guy's killing my stuff on a stiff ass fucking Ovation. You ever played an Ovation?
Guitars. I love them.
I can't stand them. They're so stiff. Like, you can't bend those strings, but somehow Bruce does it.
Well, I prefer heavier gauge strings, so maybe that's why I like them.
You and your strong Canadian hands.
Pretty mystical.
Anyways, where were we? We got to choose.
Yeah.
What did you think about it, D-Rocker?
I thought it was great. You know, like I said, you know, I was just so blown away and impressed with Bruce's performance on that song, you know, with the solos, you know, that, I mean, that one was, it was impeccable.
Yes.
Well, that was great. Andrew, did you give your thoughts on it, buddy?
Thought it was awesome. I don't know, not very creative, but, you know, it was killer. And, yeah, especially Eric Singer, you can tell, like, what a great voice he has on that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
With harmonies.
Yeah, on the I was thinking
that
myself. You
really cut through, yeah.
Big time. Mm-hmm. I was also thinking too, by about this point in the performance, that it's like, man, Eric Singer is a badass fucking drummer, dude.
Oh, he slays.
I mean, I know that, obviously, but he's killing shit on Unplugged, and you can really hear him clear, you know, with ultimate clarity, and watch him. And he's seamless, and he's singing those great parts while doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing I was thinking at this point in the DVD or whatever was that it's like, man, it's the third fucking song from freaking Hotter Than Hell.
Yeah!
You know?
Paul was even getting lost with what albums they were on, and he was saying, Dale, that everything was off of Hotter Than Hell.
He always usually says everything's off fucking Alive.
Right.
This comes off Kiss Alive. This is I Want You.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I mean, that's a great one, Unplugged. It's another one of those Kiss songs that doesn't even have that much gain on Hotter Than Hell, so it's like not really that different, you know? And it makes you think, like, what if Hotter Than Hell would have had this great production? It would be known as, like, the best Kiss album, I bet, because there's a lot of fucking great songs on Hotter Than Hell.
Although I'd miss my sludgy.
Yeah, but they could have still had the heavy sludge, but made it a little more, like, present.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I definitely get rid of those fucking cymbals.
It sounds to me like they took the master and slowed down the tape on a lot of those songs.
Yeah, me too.
And it gives, they, I think, I don't know if they've ever came out and said that, but that's what it seems like to me. What were you on? Got to Choose?
No, yes, now we are on Sure Know Something.
Oh, yeah. What are you guys' thoughts on Sure Know Something?
Great song.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I didn't think it was anything spectacular, you know, but I mean, I still like, you know, the way that they did it, you know.
I've always loved this song anyway, but you know how the Dynasty Productions just kind of...
Dynasty?
Yeah. It's a little different than the average Kiss sound. But like when you hear this song, just played with the parts that it has, and I can, even with acoustic, I hear like a Marshall anyway, you know, in my head. And I just think that it's unbelievable that they could pull this off live with those fucking vocals and those harmonies, and they totally nailed it. You know what I mean? It's like one of those ones when they first started, it's like, man, how's this going to work out? You know what I mean? Because you think in your head about all the vocals that are on this, you know, on the record. And man, they fucking nailed it. I was like impressed with Kiss last night. I was like, man, these guys are unbelievable.
And that also shows the world. Yeah, just like they could really play, even though nobody bothered to listen, really.
They could really play and they could really sing, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen at the time, Unplugged was a big deal, and it had been for, you know, a couple years, and I watched pretty much all of them, you know? And to me, Kiss is one of the best ones, and maybe it's because I'm a Kiss freak, but, I mean, sound-wise, they sound better than most people live.
Well, you know, I think that's why they did a lot of these. I think that's why they did a lot of these other songs that they normally don't do, is just to prove, you know, that, you know, they really do rock, that they really can play them, you know, live, you know, without all the overlays and all the overdubs, you know, and
all the makeup and fire and blood
and all the separate parts done all at one time, you know, that they can actually do it and do it live and do it successfully.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, maybe they felt like they had something to prove again, you know? It was the grunge era, more or less, or the tail end of it.
Right.
And they were kind of viewed as these old guys that were kind of, you know, still
Paul
hanging around.
Paul always has something that he wants to prove.
Yeah, I like never that in him, though. I mean,
yeah, can-do attitude, and right. That's missing in this world.
Yeah, it really is. It was really missing in the grunge area, because everyone was fucking whining about their daddies and all this stuff. Yeah. You know, Kiss stuck out like a sore thumb in that
era. Kept the
party
going.
Right. Yeah, party rock was kind of on the outs when everyone else is like, boo-hoo, you know. Yeah. Crybaby rock was the thing.
They stuck with their original recipe style of songwriting, you know, and didn't follow everybody else crying about this or that.
It's still Carnival.
And that's what made them great. You know?
Yeah, one of the many things that makes Kiss great. They've always kind of, you know, did their own thing. To a certain degree, at least until 79.
Right. Trying to sound like Van Halen and shit, but still, I mean, lyric-wise, you know, and, you know, their attitude with the songs, you know, still stayed pretty much the same.
Yeah,
you know?
Lyrically, they've been equally shallow their whole career, you know. But I love it. I mean, yeah. And that's not a slag, but you know what I mean? There's not a whole lot of substance in Kiss lyrics.
No.
I mean, you get your inspirational can-do things, and you get the rest of it's all sex. But that's okay. You know what I mean? That's fine. Okay, so then they... Okay, but at this point, they've played basically six songs, right?
Yes.
And we're just talking about the regular old MTV. We're not talking about the fully uncut with Come On and Love Me and Heart Like a Woman and all the... There's like five extra songs, I believe. But anyways, so at this point...
It was weird having Paul sing that, though.
What?
Heart Like
a
Woman.
Yeah, I never really care for Paul's vocal on that one. I like his harmony part when he does it with Peter.
Yeah, but like it was missing that Peter Rod Stewart type.
Right. I think Eric Singer could do it, and probably well, they didn't want to do that with Peter there.
No, motherfucker. Fuck. Even though I didn't write it.
Right. So at this point, they've played six really fucking great songs, and it's like, man, what are they gonna do next? You know, like on First Watch, you don't know exactly what's gonna be on there. And especially then, because the internet wasn't that big of a deal back then. It was like web TV, I think. I think that's what I had. I don't even remember the exact years of that. But anyways, so it's not like you knew what was going to happen, you know, as it happened in real time like it is now. But so it's like, man, six great fucking songs. Wonder what they're going to do next. And then they bust out a fucking World Without Heroes. I mean, what do you think?
I could not picture what would be going on in your mind, like, first seeing that.
Yeah, honestly, I don't even see why they even picked to even play that one. That was, like, probably one of the worst songs that they could have picked to play in this setup.
Are you insane? That's insane. No. I think it's one of the greatest things they did.
I think that's fucking awesome.
That. I do, too.
That's where I have my different opinion. I don't like the song. You know, I thought that it really broke the momentum, you know, that they were building up. You know, and I just think it was a bad pick, you know, to put in there acoustically.
Oh, man, I think you're nuts. I thought it was great. But to each his own, obviously. But what about Paul, man? Paul is fucking tearing it up on that solo. Yeah! Don't you think?
Oh, I'm not saying that he didn't. And I'm just saying, you know, I think that it was a big downer, you know, for the momentum of the show, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, it's the first real slow song. I get you there.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you drop the egg. You're like, what the fuck?
I was blown away at how good it sounded. I'd seen it, you know, on the convention, but on TV, it just sounded impeccable, I thought. I think it sounds just as good as it does on the album, if not better.
For me to go take a pee break when that song came on.
Go shake a wee-wee.
I can't wait to do the Elder episode with D-Rock. It's gonna
be
great.
I'm so excited for that. Yeah, me too.
It's gonna be really fun. I just can't believe you didn't think that was awesome. That blows my mind.
I really didn't. I really don't like that song at all. That's one that I will skip over on an album every time.
Damn. My notes just say stellar.
Cosmic.
And Paul, it fucking rips. Those are my two notes.
I like Paul's solo, but that was about it.
Yeah, I mean, he note for note, and he gets this, I don't know, man, he's killing it. What are your thoughts on it, Andrew? Did we hear from you?
Well, kind of at the beginning, but yeah, I just mean, like, it's unexpected, but that's fucking awesome, you know, considering how many years, and presently, how they shit all over the Elder.
Right.
Like, you thought they'd want to bury that forever, but that's pretty cool how they brought it back.
Yeah.
And it's killer, it sounds fucking great.
Gene sounds really good, too, vocally.
Mm-hmm.
The whole band sounds really good at this point. Paul's still got his pipes. Gene's always pretty much sounding really good, I think. So, yeah, I give World Without Heroes a big fat thumbs up. D-Rock's giving it the skip.
Weird type of person.
So then they roll into what?
Rock Bottom.
Okay. What'd you think of that?
I thought it was great. I mean, especially that they did the whole acoustic intro thing to the beginning of it.
Yeah, that's like a no-brainer at an unplugged gig, I would say.
I mean, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, and Bruce rips the lead and plays the second half like off a live. It's just kick-ass, dude. It's not one that you would normally think would sound that good unplugged, though, you know what I mean? Because it's a rocker.
Mm-hmm.
But it still totally rocks without that
fucking
Marshall.
Works, yeah.
Yeah. It's those chords and that killer bass line, you know? And it gets a little rough. You know? I'm a pretty rough guy. So, yeah, I would give Rock Bottom a thumbs up. Obviously, it's off Dress to Kill, and you know me. And D-Rock, you liked it.
Yeah.
Andrew, what did you say about it? I'm all over the place tonight. I can't get it together.
Can you edit this next joke out?
Sure.
See, I give it the big Mark St. John inflated thumbs up.
You know I'm going to have to keep that.
Oh, come on. No. But yeah, no, it was fucking killer. And as you said, no brainer that they put that in there. Because it's got that iconic intro.
Right.
And it sounds absolutely killer.
Yeah. Yep. There's not much else.
One of my favorites on here, yeah.
Totally kick ass.
Mm-hmm.
So then they roll into See You Tonight. What do you guys think about that?
Very surprising, but I'm happy they did it because I love that song and it sounds even better unplugged.
Exactly. My thoughts exactly, man. I echo that same sentiment, dude. It's like, I always love that song anyway. It's one of the ones on Gene's album that I even liked when I first got the album because I like the Beatles, you know what I mean? And it's very Beatlesque. Mm-hmm. But, I think it sounds better on Unplugged for sure because you can hear the nice vocals. There's a better guitar, better drums. It's just better, dude. It's killer. My notes to that, it says absolutely fucking awesome. And the absolutely fucking awesome is all I got on it. I mean, you can't beat it, dude. It kicks ass. What do you think, D-Rocker?
Well, I mean, I really don't care for this song that much, but I'm glad that they played it, you know, cause that they were pulling out stuff, you know, that they haven't done before, you know, and I still think it sounded great acoustically, you know. I mean, but for me, it's not one of my favorites, but I still liked it. I still dug it. I give it a thumbs up.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, it sounds great. Vocally, I just love it. I think it's great. And we all think it's great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then, right after that, it's like, dude, can this get any better? You know what I mean? This whole performance, every single song besides Domino rules. So then it's just like they hit us with one of the best Kiss ballads, probably the best Kiss ballad there is, man. Fucking I Still Love You. What do you guys think?
Fucking killer. And surprising that it worked so well unplugged, what it did.
Yeah, I don't think it was that surprising. I mean, it's not that heavy, like, guitar tone for most of it anyway.
I guess you're right.
But Paul Stanley, this is 95, still at the top of his game. Wailing.
My God, he's fucking killing it vocally.
Yeah, and I think that Unplugged, it lets him shine a little more than it does Electric. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Shows what they can do a little bit more. It gives them a little bit more... You know?
A little more space to be heard, you know. He's not competing with the heavy guitars, you know. Somebody typing?
Maybe.
Yes.
Tell her you love her and you'll be done in a little while.
Sorry.
I love it.
Look it up, internet porn.
No, I wouldn't do that here. I did that earlier, so.
Okay, so did everyone say their piece about I Still Love You?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's like, at this point, man, 10 kick-ass versions of 10 kick-ass songs, you know what I mean? Yeah!
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like, it comes to a grinding halt for me as soon as they start into this, every time I fucking look at you.
Same.
I never had a thing for that song, and to me it's just like, oh, let's figure out a song where we can use the obligatory freaking string section. At the time, every band that went on Unplugged at least had to have the obligatory fucking string section at least for one or two songs, you know? So Kiss being no exception to that, you know, trotted out this fucking piece.
Dude, it sounds weird, but I think...
I actually disagree with both of you guys. I think it's a great song, and I thought it was done very, very well.
I'm not saying they didn't perform it well, I'm just saying the song itself sucks.
Yeah, I never had a thing for that song.
It's like 10 killer songs and then one that just, man... grinds to a halt for me. I'm not saying they didn't play it well and the string section sounded fine, and you know, I watched all the way through it last night, but it's just like, geez, dude, I hate this song. You know, no matter how well it's played, it's still gonna suck in my mind. I just don't like that song. And you got the same thing. D-Rock thinks it's pretty good. You know, it is what it is. But then the magic begins, right?
We're gonna do something special. We got some members of the family here tonight, and we're not talking about mom and dad. We're talking about Peter, Chris, and Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before on the show briefly. When Ace and Peter came out that night when I watched it the first time, I mean, there was rumors they were going to come out, and I kind of expected it, but, I rumors are rumors, you never know. But when they did come out, I was almost like, you ever had those, like, tears of joy, like, happy tears? I had them, bro. It was so exciting and beautiful. It was like, I don't even know how to describe it, man. It sounds so stupid to say, but I literally had tears in my eyes, like, streaming down. It was just so magical to me.
You could tell Gene was pretty much almost the same way, you know? I mean, it was like, even Paul said, you know, when they all got back together, it's like, you could see that gleam in his eye, you know, that hasn't been there for a while, you know? And
dollar signs.
It it was, you know, you could tell that he was happy, and Paul was happy, you know, and they were loving it. It was like, a reunion, like a family reunion, the magic was still there, and
You could see in Gene's eyes that since the crowd is going absolutely bananas, he does got those dollar signs, like Andrew said. You've seen the home video, like at the beginning, where there's the whole backstage footage, right? And they show the first time that Peter got up and sang fucking Hard Luck Woman at the LA convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the crowd is going fucking ape shit. Way more than they were just, you know, the song previous without Peter, Chris. And they show a clip and they show Gene, and you could see it in his eye. He's like, holy shit, dude. Because these people are going ape shit now, and they were just kind of calm on the last song, you know? He knew. He fucking knew right then and there, dude. And it is beautiful. What?
Cutting off this segment a bit, but back to that actual convention, I thought it was really neat, you know, that they let that little 7-year-old kid get up there and start pounding out the drums. You know, and then his little sister got up there and was doing Axum Sax, you know.
That was so creepy, though.
Rocking out and shit. Paul's like, man, she was doing every move, and you know, she knew it head to toe that I didn't even remember a shit, you know. And I thought it was cool that they actually let, you know, the kid get up and pound the drums out on the song, and you know, that little girl get up and sing along with them, you know. And I thought that was really cool.
At the St. Louis convention, they let Sarah get on stage, and Paul Stanley rubbed her belly because she was pregnant at the time. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
So yeah, man, they bust into 2,000, man. I didn't expect that, really. I thought, if anything, if not shock me, they'd probably bust out. I was thinking they were going to maybe do New York Groove, you know?
That's still so cool that Ace's, like, even his acoustic is like a bright sunburst.
Of course.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And did you notice, like, when you're watching it, as soon as he starts that lead, the level of excitement in the room goes up, like, 20 decibels. Everyone starts going fucking ape shit, and he's just doing the Chuck Berry lick, you know what I mean? And people, they just love to hear him play. And I was exactly the same way. I can remember being in my room watching this for the first time back in the day and noticing my fucking fists are in the air sitting at home, like, rocking the fuck out when Ace would play his leads, you know. I'm an Ace guy, and it was just so fucking exciting, man. Like, literally, it was just fucking awesome to see. I don't know, that's my fucking guy. That's my hero. You know what I mean? Ace Frehley. He's the man. And there he is back in my favorite band, especially at that time. I hadn't got disillusioned with Kiss in the least yet. You know what I mean? At 95, I hadn't lost them yet. And that didn't happen until probably like after the farewell tour. I kind of lost interest for a while. But anyways, that's totally off the point. But it was just amazing, and I have nothing but great things to say about this whole fucking performance. It's just
magic.
Dude,
I can't even comprehend, like, how you or D-Rock or any Kiss fan at that time, like, what was going through your head?
Dude, we were crying at home. Enjoy.
That's incredible, though. You know, just...
It was, man. It really was. Dude,
I know we sound like a bunch of drum circle hippies right now, and this is as sensitive as you'll probably hear me, but you know what I mean? Like, it's... Yeah, that is incredible, though.
I like how, like, on the Second Coming, Gene says it was kind of Christian, like a phoenix rises from the ashes. It felt that way, though, dude. Like,
and the money, the magic was back.
It was, though. It so was to all of us Kiss geeks. It was just like, I've talked to a few of my friends, man, Clinton being one of them. What's up, Clinton?
Hi, Clinton.
Hi, Curly.
But, you know... We finally copped to the fact that he had tears in his eyes when he watched the shit. It's just like, you know, it's not something you admit, you know, it's kind of whatever, but...
Dude, I fucking, like, admitted that to you when Paul Stanley was doing his guitar solo right before Black Diamond, that interlude. That had me in tears.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible, though.
It's not like you're sad, it's just, it moves you.
No, it's
you,
just,
you know?
Like, yeah. Manly tears for all you ladies listening.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I ain't afraid to admit it, dude.
Yeah, it's music, and why wouldn't you listen to music unless it had that power once in a while?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can't beat it. the feeling that it gives you is there's nothing really quite like it. You know?
Well, it gets you through life.
Yeah, yep. Music's very important.
It is.
Especially when it comes from Birmingham.
Joseph Krusty Muffins is coming out with a solo album in Birmingham. Rough times in Birmingham.
The steel mills.
It was chocolate water.
Bosco.
Bosco.
Get some milk out of the other one.
Bosco.
Get all the turkey you could eat.
Gobble, gobble. We're going to get this stuffing so hot.
This must be what? Thanksgiving, honey, because I brought the stuffing. Okay, so 2000 Man fucking rocked. I mean, you know, it really did. And I thought it was cool that, you know, Ace got to do one of his. But I wish they would have done, instead of 2000 Man, if you could pick one for Ace, which one would you go with? I would go with, like, I would have liked to have heard, like, maybe, like, Talk to Me acoustic, because that would have rocked. What do you think?
Dark Light would have been cool.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, and just to see Gene, like, in the background, with maybe like when Ace is doing a solo, G could have like some maracas. I don't know. I'll go on record and say that Dark Light is the funkiest Kiss song I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I think Torpedo Girl is.
I can pitch, well, that, okay, second funkiest, but I can still, whenever I hear Dark Light, I picture Ace in like a 70s pimp hat with like a feather. Like he's got the, like, the Travolta suit on.
My name is a pimp called Slickback.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool for Ace to do that. Actually, no, fuck it. That wouldn't really work in unplugged setting.
Nah, man. Talk to Me would work.
Oh, fucking. Oh, I'm an idiot. Hard Times.
Hard Times unplugged might have been cool.
Oh, man. Dude, that is it. That's for me.
That's the one. Huh?
Absolutely. I, something moved down there, so.
Something moved it down there.
Dude,
edit that the fuck out.
Sorry.
I think if I would have been Ace, I would have probably pushed it. I think the best one they could have possibly done with him. It's not necessarily a Kiss song, but it was like "What's on Your Mind." You know that song from a solo album. That'd be great acoustic because it's pretty heavily acoustic anyway. Imagine if they would have done "Fractured Mirror."
I think that's what I was about to say, and then I retracted it because I'm just like, that would never work.
It would be cool, though.
It would. But then,
never do
like,
it, but
30 seconds in, I could see Paul just smashing his acoustic on Ace's head or something. Wonder what his trip
is. So then they roll into Beth. Thoughts on Beth, fellas?
I think perfectly, but it's a song that I think, just like Rock and Roll All Night, everybody's tired of hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. But on that version, I just remember everyone going ape shit when he goes, "Me and the boys will be playing." You know what I mean? Everyone went fucking nuts when he said that part. And what'd you think of Ace's lead for it?
He did a safety.
What'd you think of Ace's solo, though? For real?
No, it was good.
That was alright.
It was bizarre to hear, like, a solo on there, but yeah.
It started off good, but kind of petered out at the end for me. And I hate to say that about my guy, Ace Frehley, but I've heard him do much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I think Beth was pretty cool. I don't know. I wish they would have just kind of done it more like it is on the Phantom acoustic.
Or none at all.
Right. Well, which Peter one would you have him do besides Beth, though? Hard Luck Woman?
I mean, that's the driver.
Right. They should have just had Peter do Hard Luck Woman, because even on that little clip, you've seen
it. Yeah, that would have been much better.
Sounded great.
Yeah.
It's not like he doesn't sound good on Beth, but...
No, but just I don't like that song.
Yeah, we're not big Beth people here. A lot of people
love
this song.
I heard that Canadian
song.
Tire, which was fucking weird.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I've never heard Beth on
the
radio.
Why are you always at the tire store? That's what I don't get.
It's not an actual tire. No, it's not. Well, they sell tires there, but that's pretty much like Canada's hardware store.
Oh, okay. Because I remember you telling me a couple different songs that you'd heard at the Canadian Tire. I'm like, man, you're always buying tires for. What's going on?
Burning them. No, it's just that's fair.
Right on. See, I don't know all everything about Canada. I don't know about pizza. I don't know.
Or Tim Hortons. Or Hortons. Yeah, that's our big coffee place. Tim Hortons. Dude, Paul Stanley did the funniest stage rap. He just, we go to Second Cup, and nobody goes to Second Cup. So then just the audience went dead there. Just, or Tim Hortons. And then there you go, Paul.
Everyone went nuts.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So, yeah, they kind of did Beth, and yeah, I can't blame them. It was their biggest hit, right?
Yeah.
But then they bring everybody else out. Mm-hmm. And at first I was thinking, this is weird. Some six-man Kiss, you know what I mean?
Then they form into the Megazord, and then they battle a giant dinosaur.
That would be awesome. I think it's kind of cool on Nothing to Lose how you got one drummer doing the main vocal, and then the other drummer's doing all the classic Catman shit.
Just awesome.
You say, dumb question, why does Eric sing that instead of Gene? Is it too high in his register, or like, what's up with that?
I'm not sure why Eric started singing that one. I don't know.
I think it's more or less because Eric could get the gravelly, you know, Peter Criss sound, you know, better than what Gene can.
I know, but he sings Gene's part, though.
Right, yeah, because Gene sings the verses.
Yeah.
Normally. Yeah, I always wondered that myself. I don't get exactly why.
That or Young and Wasted.
Why did Eric do that? I don't know. He sounded great doing it, though.
No, I'm not that I'm complaining, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I was always wondering about that myself.
But it's weird. I want to bring up the mini controversy. Like, Paul sort of said, like, the reason that they had two drummers was to... Like, he's probably just poking, because they're just, like, poking at each other all the time.
The beeping.
The beeping, the bopping, the bopping, the jello pudding. But just saying that like Peter sounded so bad that they wanted Eric to mask it or something. I remember Paul either saying that or hearing that in an interview or something.
Really?
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Even Peter was talking with Eric and he was like, yeah, you just play everything else and I'll just be back there and keep time or whatever, you know. It's like,
yeah, he's like, I ain't trying to steal nothing from you, man. 6 months later, he stole that shit.
Gig. I'll steal your fucking gig.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, but I thought that Nothing to Lose was pretty good.
It's one of the first songs I checked out on Unplugged.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never really had a whole lot for Nothing to Lose as a song, you know? I mean, I'm a fan. I'm pro, like, anal songs, but I'm just kidding.
Well, this is also, like... cool song for me too, because getting Kissology, like that's my first exposure to all that old footage.
Okay.
So hearing that on was it the Midnight Special? Hearing Nothing to Lose. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's on the
Dick Clark. ABC. Oh, okay.
Could have sworn it was Midnight Special. Anywho, yeah, they just that song is really that's what kicked it for me. But yeah, this was really killer to hear live, Unplugged with Super Kiss.
Right. Six-man Super Kiss. They look like they're having a fucking blast, dude. They're all smiling and having a good time. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're good at faking having a blast.
I think they honestly were, though. Yeah. I don't think that was a like put on that for that.
Ever since reading Peter's book about like Symphony, like how much fun they said they were having and how Peter wanted to stab Paul and Gene.
Right. So they do Nothing to Lose. It's kind of cool. Not one you wouldn't normally expect, really. You know, it translates well to acoustic because even.
Well, it's funny. It's about anal sex, but it sounds like a Brady Bunch song.
Right.
Like, that's how happy it is.
So then it's like, man, they've done 14 pretty fucking cool songs. And then I wonder what they're going to end with. I was sitting at home going, well, you think they'll play Rock and Roll All Night?
I want to know if we got any people here tonight that like to get high!
No. Of course they're going to do Rock and Roll All Night. And I think the greatest part about this version of Rock and Roll All Night, honestly, I mean, besides the obvious, that you know, the full six-man Kiss and all that, was just they come out of the solos, like Ace does his half, Bruce does the second half, but then when it gets ready to go back into the chorus, Ace does the fucking classic, what? It's fucking great, man. I actually literally rewound it 10 times last night because I was just on a roll. I had forgotten that, you know. I always think of that part from Alive, but it was just hilarious to see Ace do it and hear him do it. It's fucking classic, man. I love it. That's my only note for this one. It's Ace doing the...
What?
What? It's great. It's fucking great. What do you guys think about it?
It's almost like that sort of, you know, just, oh, go on. Like, you know, you need to do it.
Right.
But, I mean, it sounded all right for what it was, but...
What'd you think about, like, each guy taking a verse? Like, Ace is doing a verse, Peter does a verse, and they sound fucking hilarious. Just, especially Ace's. I don't know, I was pretty stoned when I was checking this shit out. Man, it had me rolling, honestly.
Dude, if I may be honest, I barely watched rock and roll all night.
Right.
Yeah.
What'd you think, D-Rocky?
Well, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I thought it was hilarious, but I still like the fact that they actually did, you know, go off and do their own little separate parts. I mean, I would have picked a different song to end with than that one, you know, because, I mean, every concert they've ever done, they end with that damn song.
Well, yeah. You got to have Rock and Roll Night at a Kiss show.
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, I just think, you know... Just the way I feel about it is, you know, I'm just so fucking sick of that goddamn song.
Right. I love that they spell
MTV
night.
MTV would have had...
Go ahead, buddy.
I think MTV would have had a shit fit if they didn't play that, though.
Right.
Because since that's their most popular one, like, it's something they'd have to do.
Right. So I think all in all, it was a fucking great performance, but there's a couple things that I wanted to ask you guys about. Did you guys notice, like... And the way that, I mean, it was cool the way they had it set up with the whole rock and roll over underneath them and like the fucking mannequins and shit back behind them. But I was just noticing a couple random things about Unplugged in general. It's like, they always show those people that are behind the band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, why would you sit these people here? There's only like 10 or 15 people back there.
Like, it's a guided tour of the studio. They got lost there, so...
It's just like, you know, they feel awkward the whole time because they know they're on camera and they're just like trying to act like they're rocking out and shit. But
it's like all the people at the Grammys.
Yeah.
You see all the people in suits at the Grammys. You know, he's with the old lady. He's just like, you know, if someone sees us together, you might have a little explaining to do.
Right. Did you notice that there's some weird like the all over in the back of the... I don't know if Kiss brought this shit, or because I don't really remember seeing it on any other Unplugs, but like there's like these big things that almost look like alien sperm or something. You know what I mean? Like, they're like these creatures all over the place, and it's like, does Kiss bring that, or was that just there? Because I don't remember seeing it on any other Unplugs. But,
not too sure. That should be a question on the Kiss cruise. The Unplugged was with that alien
sperm, dude. What's up with that?
You know, I was always into science fiction and horror movies, and I was always into the human anatomy. So, you know, some people like steak, and some people like aliens and sperm.
I'm one of those people.
Edit that the fuck out.
Yeah. Okay, so they do this killer Unplugged, and it's like... I don't know about you guys, but for me at the time, I was like, man, there's no way they're not doing a reunion now. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Is that how you felt?
I think it was obvious, you know, by the end of that, you know.
The pop they got when Ace and Peter were playing, they knew they had to do something. Mm-hmm. Because they were pretty much popular at that time. I mean, they had a crowd. But the reaction of these same people just by having Ace and Peter on stage with them was like crazy. Tenfold, you know? Mm-hmm. And they had to know it, and they knew it right then and there that it was on. I bet you anything, Gene made up his mind right there on that stage that night. You know what I mean? And, you know, shortly after, we had the full-blown reunion, and that'll be a whole nother episode. I don't think we've done a full-blown reunion episode, have we?
Nope.
So, yeah, stay tuned for that, Strange Ways, people. I think we are going to wrap this one up, though, and... We do want to thank you for listening. As always, check out our podcast buddies. Check out Andrew and I on Podcast Rock City every week as well. That drops every Monday. And get a lot of Gene Simmons, Andrew on that show.
Unfortunately.
And, you know, keep checking out Strange Ways. We're going to try to get back on some covers. There may be some new Peter Criss covers with D-Rock singing. You never know. Clinton may come out of hiding. You just never know. But one thing is for sure, we're going to keep doing shows, and we're going to try to get back on a little bit more frequently for you listeners out there. So once again, from Jendell, this is Jody Havnot.
And I'm D-Rock.
I'm Andrew.
And with our powers combined, we become Strange Ways. So fucking stupid.
Podcast Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City. Join me each and every week as I give you my opinion on all the KISS topics and news of the week. I talk about every era of KISS with a number of guest hosts from all your favorite KISS podcasts. Check the show out on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, and YouTube. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Podcast Rock City, your 20-minute KISS fix.
You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the KISS Room. The KISS Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world. KISS! It's your place for all things KISS and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The KISS Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Kistery Science Theater, the most civilized.
Yeah. Oh, f***. Oh, f***, Lee. Come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine Gene with like a washtub bass. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom. And serious.
No, wait. Excuse me, Bob. You're going to come over and do my album.
KISS Podcast on the web. Kistery Science Theater. We bust balls because we can.
Doctors define modern rock disorder as a sudden, intense drop in musical taste affecting all facets of the victims' lives and the lives of those around them. Over 20 million Americans suffer. Do you? Has your overwhelming desire to drink a sixer of Natty Ice and yell at girls from the back of a pickup truck seriously impaired your work or social life? The Decibel Geek Podcast offers new hope. The Decibel Geek Podcast, the only podcast proven effective for MRD. MRD hurts. The Decibel Geek Podcast can help. Visit www.decibelgeek.com to begin the road to recovery.
Someone, somewhere is needing to hear from you. Someone needing to know that you care. Care enough to give the gift of Podkist. Tell a friend about Podkist today. Download us on iTunes, friend us on Facebook, and rock your ass out. Podkist.
I'm afraid I've given you all the time I can spare at the moment, my dear. You'll have to come back. Thank you, and goodbye.
I love you. Bye!